item of this morning. Item number eight, Puget Sound Chinook Harvest Management Plan. This is an update, so Kyle, you're still in the hot seat there.
Thank you again, Chair Smith. I told Ron this morning I had three things on my schedule today: the North of Falcon briefing, the Puget Sound Chinook Harvest Management Plan briefing, and a filling to get replaced, and that he's got to take one of them for me. So
The filling's probably the best.
The most enjoyable of the bunch.
Best choice.
So I'm here today to give you an update. It's been almost a year since I gave you a briefing on the Puget Sound Chinook Harvest Management Plan. I'm going to start with just some background on the plan. A lot of it's similar to what you heard last January, but it has been a year. Talk about some of the challenges with the plan, and probably most importantly, give you the updates on what's happened since that submission of the draft plan back in December of 2017, and our next steps in the near future. So into the background, Puget Sound Chinook were listed in March of 1999. Then in July of 2000, NEMPS issued their salmon ESA 4D rule, which established the take prohibitions for Puget Sound Chinook. In that rule were some limits on the application of take prohibitions on Chinook and Puget Sound Chinook and other salmon species. And there's a long list of limits on that application, but the one that we're going to focus on today is fishery management plans that are covered under USV Washington and USV Oregon. So the Puget Sound Treaty Tribes and WDFW have submitted a series of jointly developed resource management plans under that Limit 6. 2004 and 2010 were the two longer-term plans. There have been a mix of other methods for getting coverage in between. Back in 2010, we submitted what was a five-year plan that was intended to cover fisheries from 2010 through 2014. And after that submission, NOAA raised concerns about southern resident killer whales. The co-managers modified that term of the plan. NOAA wasn't comfortable with the five-year plan, so we shortened it to only cover fisheries through 2013. In 2014, the Bureau of Indian Affairs submitted a Section 7 consultation request to cover fisheries. That's the mode we've been in since then, is trying to get one-year extensions under a Section 7 coverage for Puget Sound Chinook fisheries. Most of you remember 2016. That was the year where we finished North of Falcon but did not come to agreement with the co-managers on fisheries in Puget Sound. And that delayed our ESA coverage. It was a couple of months where we didn't have coverage. We had to close not just salmon fisheries, but game fish fisheries, any fisheries that might be affecting listed Chinook salmon. Coming out of that, in October of 2016, the United States and 16 tribes requested a meet and confer under the provisions of USV Washington to develop a court-approved regional salmon management plan, and the state and tribes agreed to enter into that mediation in lieu of litigation. We were also, one of the reasons we couldn't get to a long-term plan, we were sort of punting it down the road, was we were working on updating our fishery model, which is we call FRAM. We knew there were going to be some changes to the estimated impacts on stocks from that update, and we wanted to understand those before we went and proposed another long-term management plan. So that process took longer than we thought, as most things seem to do, but we finished that off in 2017, which put us in position to start really trying to get to a long-term plan again. And then in 2017, it was another Section 7 consultation through BIA that we used to cover fisheries. And the development of this new resource management plan quickly became the sole focus of the mediation process that we were in with the tribes. The goal was to complete a long-term plan by December 1st of 2017 for submission to NOAA. NOAA's analysis of the next long-term plan, they've told us, is going to take 18 months, so we were hoping to get that into NOAA by December 1st of 2017 so that long-term coverage could take effect with fisheries that start in May of 2019. And then again in 2018, we used that single-year Section 7 consultation through BIA to get coverage. You'll recall from last year that NOAA's initial review of that long-term plan concluded that they needed more information before they could start their formal analysis and approval process. The goal of the plan, as stated in this and past plans, is to ensure that fishery-related mortality will not impede rebuilding of natural Puget Sound Chinook salmon populations consistent with the capacity of properly functioning habitat to levels that will sustain fisheries, enable ecological functions, and are consistent with treaty reserve fishing rights. Most of you are fairly familiar with Puget Sound, but this plan is about the 22 wild Chinook populations in Puget Sound from the Nooksack River down to Nisqually and South Sound and out to the Elwha and the Strait of Juan de Fuca. We aggregate these by management units, so there, some watersheds have multiple Chinook populations. We aggregate those for management, and they're also grouped into regions, Strait of Juan de Fuca, Hood Canal, South Sound, North Sound, and the Strait of Georgia. This is important as we talk about prioritizing populations and getting to recovery, because the recovery criteria say we have to have two populations in each of these regions, and as you can see on the map, three of the five regions only have two populations, so those populations have to be recovered. This is a just a screen grab of the management objectives from the 2010 plan. I'm not going to go through this, but the point here is that we've got 22 populations, and we have abundance thresholds and exploitation rate limits that are population specific for each one of those. So it's very complex management trying to set fisheries that meet all of these criteria. So those criteria are what we take to North of Falcon every year when we start planning fisheries. We put fisheries in our fishery model and run the model, see if we're meeting all of the objectives that need to be met, and if not, make changes until we get a set of fisheries, state and tribal, that meet all of the requirements. The model is really based on coded wire tag recovery. So we put coded wire tags in a lot of hatchery fish. Those get recovered in fisheries, and that's how we estimate where individual populations are being impacted by fisheries. So there are a lot of challenges to a new long-term plan. One of the biggest is that Chinook abundance in Puget Sound hasn't improved since ESA listing. This graph shows hatchery and wild abundance. So hatchery abundance is variable, but still pretty high. But if you look at the dashed red line here, there, that's a recent 10-year average Chinook abundance, and you can see it's lower than it was back around 99 when Puget Sound Chinook were listed. We've already talked today about southern resident killer whales. Those were a big concern when we developed the 2010 plan, and they're even more of a concern now. With the decline in their abundance, there's more scrutiny not just on fisheries, but on all the activities that may affect killer whales. As part of the Pacific Salmon Treaty renegotiations, NOAA undertook rerunning all of their analysis to see what the exploitation rates that the populations could withstand are. They call those rebuilding exploitation rates, or RERs. A lot of those new RERs were lower than what they were the last time NOAA did that. So saying these populations can't sustain as much harvest as they could 10 years ago. And northern fisheries, even with the new Pacific Salmon Treaty agreement that lowers exploitation rates to the north, are still an issue. For some of our populations, just the impacts from Canadian fisheries are higher than what biologically we think the stock can withstand without some actions like hatchery conservation programs to support them. Given all that, it was obvious as we went into this that we were going to need additional constraints on fisheries in the new plan. The combination of lower abundances and lower allowable exploitation rates. And we have to work with 17 tribes on the management objectives for all 15 management units in 22 populations. So it's a challenge just to coordinate everything that has to get done watershed by watershed, Puget Sound wide. A little bit on the plan that we submitted last December and are working on revising now. The proposal is for a 10-year plan. As you can see from the iterations we've been through trying to get to a new long-term plan, it doesn't make sense to have to redo this every few years, so we're hoping we can get to something 10-year plan with check-ins along the way if modifications need to be made. The structure of the plan's pretty similar to the past plans. The body of the plan has a lot of background information on fisheries, on the populations, management objectives, how we will implement the plan, monitoring an assessment of fisheries. But the meat of the plan's really in what we call the management unit profiles, which are watershed by watershed overviews of the populations, the habitat issues, hatchery production, the stock status, and a description of what our management limits for each population are. There were some notable changes in the plan that we submitted in December of 2017. We added sort of a lower tier point of instability for several stocks. So it's sort of we want to keep the population up here, but if it gets down here, we've got to do something really drastic. We implemented total exploitation rate ceilings for Snohomish and Stillaguamish Chinook. In past plans, there were provisions that if northern fisheries were very large, we would still have some amount of allowable harvest in the south. The new plan says that this is the total allowable. The north is going to take some amount, and we'll take what's left, but we will not exceed that total. For several watersheds and Central Sound, we moved from an exploitation rate ceiling management to an escapement goal management. So a lot of work was done to see what the habitat capacity was for these watersheds. And the management is now intending to hit that escapement number through management of terminal fisheries and through limits on pre-terminal fisheries. And we spent a lot of time last year talking about Stillaguamish. The Stillaguamish plan has natural and hatchery origin Chinook limits that vary by the abundance of Chinook expected to return. So after we submitted that plan in December of 2017, NOAA did their initial review and identified issues that needed resolution. They pointed out that the exploitation rates proposed in the co-manager plan were higher than NOAA's calculated rebuilding exploitation rates for most of the populations. And they asked for additional explanations for how the plan meets requirements of the 4D rule. So it has specific requirements that they wanted a more direct explanation for how the plan meets all of those requirements. This is a table I showed you last year that we received from NOAA that just compares their rebuilding exploitation rates to what was in the co-manager plan. And the red there basically means that our proposed rates were higher than what NOAA's calculation said. This led to a quite complicated technical process due to differences in fishery models that are used by NOAA and by the co-managers. Several meetings over the summer, a lot of back and forth trying to figure out what are the differences and what do they mean so that we can understand that when we resubmit a new plan and when NOAA does their analysis. Not surprisingly, we didn't get a lot done on revising the plan through North of Falcon last year. North of Falcon sucks up all of the time of the staff that are also working on this plan, but we got back to work in the summertime. As I mentioned, we had a technical work group that worked on those differences in exploitation rates. We've also had data revisions since that submission, so there's work to do with updating the plans with revised data, and that's led to recalculation of objectives and thresholds with that update for several of the management units. We've also been working on revising the profiles just to address those ESA criteria that NOAA needed more information on. We've also completed the Pacific Salmon Treaty negotiations since last year, so we have more clarity on what the future might hold for northern fisheries and what that means, what the treaty says southern U.S. fisheries need to do. And throughout the year, we've given periodic updates to our Puget Sound sport fishing advisors. They have calls throughout the year to talk about in-season fishery issues, and we've tagged on those to give them an update on what we've been working on. The good news is we have one watershed that NOAA has said that one's good to go when you submit the full plan, and that is the Skokomish. We revised the Skagit sections with the updated data I was talking about, resubmitted that to NOAA recently. We revised the NOOKSAC objectives. The previous draft of the plan had a two-tiered exploitation rate limit with a higher allowable rate at higher abundances. We've removed that, so NOOKSAC will be managed at the same flat rate regardless of abundance. We still have some work to do to address some of NOAA's comments on that section before we resubmit it. And we've got, I say, ongoing work with NOAA. There's no work going on with NOAA right now, obviously, with the shutdown. In fact, some NOAA staff members are bored enough to be here listening to this today. But we're working with them to resolve outstanding issues on the Elwha, Dungeness, Midhood Canal, and the Nisqually, Puyallup, White River, Green, and Lake Washington sections. And we're continuing discussions on the Stillaguamish and Snohomish sections, harvest and non-harvest issues, and potential solutions. Killer whales were a big consideration as we developed the 2017 version that was submitted, and if anything, it's become more of an issue since then. There's been a lot of discussion with the governor's task force and everything else. There's been a lot of talk about predation on these listed populations by species other than killer whales as well. But we are working with NOAA on, as Ron mentioned, a sort of a framework to evaluate the effects of fisheries as we set fisheries in the future. And we're working on revising the main chapters of the plan that are non-watershed specific. That's kind of fallen to a lower priority as we try to get the watershed pieces nailed down that feed that bigger part. And we haven't yet set a schedule for resubmission of the long-term plan to NOAA. We're continuing work on all of the outstanding management unit sections. We have meetings scheduled with the co-managers and NOAA through late January. Obviously, those have all been postponed, and we'll see if they're back to work in time for the meeting we have scheduled on the 24th. Our goal this year is to resolve all of the management objectives with the co-managers and NOAA prior to the start of North of Falcon. Last year, we went into North of Falcon with this discrepancy between NOAA's rates and our rates and really didn't resolve that until the final day of the Pacific Fishery Management Council meeting in April. So this year we want to try to get those set going into North of Falcon so that we can plan fisheries and not be trying to figure out what our objectives are. So I ran through that pretty fast, but happy to take any questions you might have.
I think you dealt with this a lot, but in looking at those differences that we have with NOAA on RER, and it looks like we're making some good progress, so that's pleasing. But what if there's no agreement? Is it NOAA to have the final say? How does that process work?
Ultimately, NOAA makes the decision on whether the plan meets the requirements. There's a lot of communication. Our numbers don't have to match. They consider other things, including the differences in the models. So that's why we're coordinating a lot of back and forth to make sure that what we take to them as a final product, we think we'll meet the bar.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'll be brief. Maybe we can take up some of the more questions under our executive session under agenda item 11. But about a year ago, the commission asked that the staff go forward and talk to five or six different things. You've mentioned a couple of them in your slide. One of the slides says that co-manager discussions are continuing with Stillaguamish and Snohomish. One of those issues last January that was a key one had to do with protection of marked hatchery fish. And another one had to do with what I'll call the 8% quagmire. Another one had to do with targets versus ceilings. Are those the kind of things that are still outstanding? They're not those are more not necessarily ESA pressure on ESA stocks, but rather management tools and sharing and this and that. So are those are the things that are still outstanding, or are there more than that that And again, we can talk about it again later, but if you want to speak to that.
Thank you, Chair Smith, Commissioner McIsaac. Yes, those are the sorts of things we're continuing discussions on. There was, with all of the data updates that were going on, a need to wait for those to get done to start looking at numbers again. But those are the sorts of things that potential changes to hatchery production, marking status, that sort of thing.
Okay. We'll pick the rest of it up later then.
Right. Thank you. Thanks, Scott. No, come on to Dennis.
Thank you.
It'll be a pleasure.